Blog Talk Radio.
Talk about it right now. It is Monday, November 15th, 2100, Washington, D.C., United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun, and I am your lovable host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Hey, let's talk about it. Here we go. Quote of the day, quote of the week, quote of the month. Valerie Jarrett on Obama. He knows exactly how smart he is. He's been bored to death his whole life. He's just too talented to do what ordinary people do. Is she describing the chief executive? Is she describing the president or an out-of-work porn star? It's hard to tell. Once again, he knows exactly how smart he is. He's been bored to death his whole life. He's just too talented to do what ordinary people do. That's what Valerie Jarrett from my hometown worked for Mayor Daley in the mayor's office. Committed socialist, anarchist, Marxist. I know all about it. I'm from Chicago. I know the lady well. Met her once while, you know, mildly attractive. In a really weird, weird, weird way. President Obama leaving town again. He's racking up the frequent flyer miles. Perhaps he senses that, you know, his time as president is almost up. 2012 coming along. It'll be here in no time. He's got to, you know, get those vacations in where he can find them. If President Obama is not yet convinced that his international star power has faded, his next round of transatlantic sumptuaries should clear up any lingering doubts. Yeah, he's hitting the blue skies again on another trip. Rock star status gone. Oratory skills. Never were there. Mr. Teleprompter-in-Chief is still, just not doing it for folks anymore. His star has faded, and the trip about nothing, where he once again we crapped out, completely crapped out, snake eyes, came up with nothing. Even though President Bush. Had a deal in place with South Korea already. All Obama had to do was, you know, pick it up and, you know, walk out with it. But no, because he's so smart. You know, he's so brilliant. He decided that, old dumb President Bush, duh, you know, he can't do a deal like I can do a deal. Because I'm the president. I got to do his voice. I'm President Barack Obama. And then President Bush gave us 8 years of nothing, and I got to clean up his mess. And he can't ride in the car. He got to ride in the back of the car because he put the car in the ditch. So I'm going to South Korea, and I'm gonna get a better deal.
Okay, so
He came back with nothing. He may have gotten a T-shirt out of the deal. You know, I love South Korea. Other than that, it's snake eyes. So the whole trip long was just one big old mess. And why is the first lady wearing a pompadour? Has anybody noticed her new haircut? She's in pompadour right now. What is that all about? She's truly having a bad hair day, I got to tell you that right now. What a mess. And you know what? There's blood in the water. And then the sharks are about to feed on the anointed one, our deity, our Jesus, baby Jesus. I'm talking about Barack Obama. Saturday Night Live threw down a powerful sketch, completely hilarious. And I'd like you just to take a little bit of this. Just listen to it a little bit. For those of you who missed it Saturday night, it was hilarious. Let's go with it right now.
Next on C-SPAN, on Friday, President Obama was in Seoul, South Korea for the annual G20 conference, where he met privately with Chinese President Hu Jintao.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Thank you. Earlier today, representatives of the world's 20 largest economies concluded the full session of the annual G20 conference, after which President Hu and I were able to meet privately. We had an extraordinarily frank and wide-ranging discussion on a variety of topics, from trade practices to currency devaluation to fair labor standards to global climate change. I left convinced that relations between the United States and China remain strong and will only go stronger. President Hu.
Thank you, President Obama. President Obama is absolutely correct. In our meeting, we spoke candidly about a wide array of issues, everything under the sun. No topic was off limits. You name it, we covered it. In fact, and correct me if I'm wrong, the only thing we didn't talk about is the matter of your country owing China a great deal of money. About $800 billion, actually. Strangely, that is the one subject we did not discuss.
The United States is well aware of its debt to China.
I kept waiting for you to bring it up, and when you didn't, I thought to myself, did they already pay us back and I just forgot? Or perhaps the money arrived after I left for this conference. But I checked with my office, and they haven't received it.
As President Hu will recall, we discussed this issue a year ago. As I said at the time, the United States fully intends to honor its debt.
So, did you bring the check?
Okay, that's just a little bit of that sketch. We'll get back to a little more of it a little bit later. President Barack Obama being made fun of by Saturday Night Live. Now, of course, by no means, this is not the first time that Obama has been made the butt of jokes, but it is quite hilarious that he's being mocked for owing quite a bit of money. And let me just say this right now. What the hell is going on? Democrats, socialists, Marxists, they're all coming out of the woodwork now. Did anybody hear about the interview with Gore Vidal, where a well-known socialist, I'm calling him a socialist, but he calls himself a liberal or perhaps a progressive, where this progressive interviewer interviews Gore Vidal, who is a very well accomplished author. My favorite book with Gore's, my favorite book of Gore's is Abraham Lincoln. It's called Lincoln, and it's a great read. It's a really big, thick book, but it is just a really great piece, historical a novel. I have nothing but respect for Gore Vidal, even though he sounds a little bit like Chancellor Palpatine from the Star Wars movies. That aside, I mean, he's just a brilliant author. Well, take a listen to this.
I've written with great admiration of Abraham Lincoln. And I think probably the best book I've ever read about American history is your Lincoln. Having said that, I've come to question, and it's a difficult question to ask and answer, whether or not Lincoln was wrong, whether Lincoln's fervent prayer that no matter what, we had to preserve the Union, that perhaps now with the benefit of 150 years of hindsight, that was the fundamental mistake.
What? To preserve the Union?
Preserve the Union. Had those states been allowed to go, would we be in a different place? Would the Republic that had survived the departure of those states been a very different and perhaps stronger one today?
Well, what Lincoln had to deal with, could the Republic continue as a Republic or as anything viable with slavery? We had slavery in the Constitution of the United States. People had rights to own other people. Now, that's not a good thing. Lincoln had a sharp eye for the ridiculous. The ridiculous was always that a house divided against itself cannot stand.
Okay, so I'm having a hard time understanding what where this guy is going with this. Is he suggesting that if the white Southerners and the Negroes were left to their own devices, that the country probably would have been better off, and we would have had a completely different, perhaps socialist, Marxist government had the darkies and the rednecks been detached from the from the rest of the country? Is that what he's saying? I mean, what did you take from that? The call-in number is 347-884-8500. What was that all about? All right, so he's saying that what he's suggesting is that perhaps the country that he knows would have been better off had the southern states been allowed to continue on with slavery, and the rednecks and the know-nothings, because a lot of folks up north believe that southerners are really kind of dumb and slow, and then they don't really know what the hell is going on, and they're just way patriotic, and all they care about is America and God and apple pie and their guns and their religion. So I guess he's saying that if they just, you know, let that whole thing, you know, just kind of go its own way, that the rest of the country, the remaining states, would have been much better off. I suppose that's what he means by that. Seems kind of weird. Yeah. So I say, wake up, Black America. Your masters, the Democrats, want to put you back in chains. Not that they really let you out of the chains in the first place, because basically he's saying that, you know, maybe he's saying that Barack Obama is a failed president, and that maybe if, you know, well, but Barack Obama really didn't come from, you know, he came straight from, you know, Africa, you know, the proper way, I suppose, you know, on a nice big cruise ship or something. Oh, well. Another intellectual, elitist, West Coast fruitcake moron whom I will forevermore ignore, because that was just completely out there where the buses don't run. These folks are desperate. They are desperate. Barack Obama is failing the country. The emperor has no clothes. He's buck naked. And they know it. They know it. Barack Obama doesn't know what the hell is going on. He doesn't know what he's doing. Even Democrats are saying that he's completely inept. Heads of state from around the country are making fun of him now. You know, whereas when he first took office, he was a rock star and everybody loved him. And, you know, it was like he was Mick Jagger, you know, or Elvis, if Elvis were still alive. Of course, some of us believe that he really is. He's still underground. He's just waiting for the right time to come on out. But that be that as it may, there are those who are now saying that Barack Obama is not up to the task. But wasn't he supposed to be this genius? The savior of not just the United States of America, but indeed the whole wide world. I mean, you know, he's already, you know, screwed up that whole, there's no blue states, there's no red states, only the United States of America. That's done with. Because he has been as partisan can possibly be. Bob Schaefer, who was just kissing Obama's butt. I mean, the chapstick was flowing freely because he was kissing Obama's butt. Now, Bob Schaefer even believes that Barack Obama's not up to the task, that he doesn't have what it takes. Some of us already knew this. Hillary Clinton told us about this. She warned us. Who you gonna call? The senator who spent less than a full term in the United States Senate, or a seasoned political pro like her? Now, quite frankly, I have no use for either of them. But in fact, she did warn us that this guy was way in over his head and did not have the chops to be president of the United States. I submit that you can be as smart as you want to be. You can be a genius. But that doesn't mean you're fit to be president of the United States. And now dude's leaving. He's leaving on a jet plane. We don't care if he comes back again. He's leaving next week on another trip. Get some more t-shirts and some of those snow things. You know, the thing with where you shake it up and the snow flails around. That kind, he's getting some more of that stuff. He's gonna come back with a whole plane load of souvenirs. Because that's all he ever gets when he leaves on these trips. I mean, dude is either on vacation, chilling somewhere ritzy and fancy, or he's flying around the whole world. Now, I spent 25 years in the Marine Corps, in the military service. I know what it takes to prepare for a presidential trip, not just the next two continents or so. But if he were flying to Chicago, there is 400,000, 500,000 people on alert getting things ready. There's 10, 20, 30 cars. There's pre-planning, post-planning. Oh my God, the prep is phenomenal. You wouldn't believe it. Now he's packing up to leave town again. Not just town, but the United States of America. You know what? I think he's running. I think he's running scared. I think he's leaving town because he knows that he sucks all to be damned. And the United States of America has figured it out. There are those, and there are liberals out there who are saying that he would be a more effective president if he announced within the very near future that he will not run for a second term. I mean, wow. The dude has fallen off a cliff, but I don't discount him. the powers that be did not put Mr. Barack, teleprompter, puppet, empty suit Obama in office for no reason. He's there for a reason. You know, last night I couldn't sleep, and I didn't feel like reading. I didn't feel like watching any TV, but I just couldn't sleep. So I put on one of my audiobooks on my laptop. The audiobook is a book called The Manchurian President. Now, you've heard of the movie with Denzel Washington and then the original before that with Frank Sinatra called The Manchurian Candidate. Well, the title doesn't speak to those movies. It's not the same. The Manchurian President is basically about Barack Obama and the way that and his complete history, the history of surrounding himself with radicals, communist, socialist, Marxist friends and cohorts. Not a lot of people know that, unless you've read deep into his bio, that Barack Obama's ties to the terrorist group from the Weather Underground, they called themselves the Weathermen first, and then they changed their name to the Weather Underground, that his ties go back to nearly his childhood. And we're talking about his friendship with admitted terrorist Bill Ayers. That all of his life, his ideology has been anti-American, anti-capitalist, and he has done a remarkable job deflecting what America is coming to discover is that he has no use for America the way that we love it, that a lot of us love it. He doesn't have any great love for America. And didn't we get a hint of that? Remember when he dismissed the notion that he should wear an American flag lapel pin like John McCain or the other candidates during debates and that sort of thing, and he sort of dismissed that. They're really small things, but they're red flags nonetheless. Barack Obama does not love America the way you and I do. I was listening to the audiobook, and the revelations in this book are chilling. Because a lot of what's in the book and a lot of what I listened to last night is actually happening. This book was written more than a year and a half ago. And a lot of what's in the book is actually playing itself out in history, in real time. That's what's so chilling about books like The Manchurian President. Barack Obama has managed to align himself with socialists and Marxists and people who ultimately want to see this country torn asunder from the inside out. It's frightening. Let's leave it at that. Think about it. Do some homework. Hey, check out this book, The Manchurian President, by Aaron Klein with Brenda J. Elliott. Let's talk about my girl. You know her. You love her. Sarah Palin. She is hot. My goodness, that's a beautiful woman. I got to tell you what. Her reality show broke ratings records. Bam. She did the damn thing. I'll tell you that right now. Sarah Palin is not only beautiful. She can shoot the grizzly. She can shoot the elk. She can shoot the moose. drag it home, dress it, fry it up in a pan, and never, never, ever let you forget that you're a man. I think that that's what so many women find so objectionable about her. Not only is she a brilliant politician, she's a beautiful woman. She's a capable woman. A lot of these women around here, and I'm talking about black women right now, because black women seem to be the most threatened by Sarah Palin. I talk to women all the time. White women, Caucasian women, they don't really, it's not that big of a deal. You know, they don't like her. You know, and they'll just kind of leave it at that. But black women seem to have an utter distaste for her, almost bordering on hatred for a woman they've never even met. I know why it is. Because most of you black women go out and you get your hair done and your nails done at some dude's, some poor sap's expense. And you don't really do anything at all. No, you sludge off to work and do very little, making minor ducats, minor bread, minor jack. You probably got some dude that's cheating on you with your best friend or your mama. And you hear about a beautiful Caucasian woman who was a governor in one of the largest states in the country, if not the largest, next to Texas. Worldly, hunting, fishing, chief executive, looks just as good in a pair of jeans as she does in business attire. Famous, making major jack, and just doing it. And there's jealousy. It's just plain and simple jealousy. Her inaugural show brought in a whopping 5 million viewers on a Sunday night. Bam. It's the first episode of an 8-part series. It was the most watched program in launch in TLC's history, the Learning Channel. Now, that is fantastic. You go, Sarah. You go, girl. Black ladies, sisters out there, eat your hearts out. You got nothing on Sarah. How sad is that? I tell you what, if you get your little butts out there and, you know, do a little fishing, do a little hunting, you know, that kind of thing, you know, bring in a little more bread. Stop depending on a man to get your hair and your nails done. Maybe we'll like you as much as we like Sarah. Maybe. Anyway, I watched Sarah's special, and it was great. It was wholesome and wonderful. The family dynamic was beautiful. What a concept. Hey, Sarah Palin is all good. I voted for Bristol the other night, and I'm so glad that she's being treated well on Dancing with the Stars. In fact, I vote for Bristol every single week. I think she's kind of cute, too. And she is doing so well. So, the Palin girls doing the damn thing. It's beautiful. I love it. I want you to love it, too. All right. So, what's the next topic? What are we going to talk about now? Can we talk about Barack Obama leaving town again? Or Newsweek. Newsweek has issued the ultimate backhanded smackdown of Barack Obama of any so far. And he's received his share of smackdowns this last couple of weeks, starting with the November 2nd elections. But the ultimate smackdown so far is that Newsweek suggests that the presidency has grown and grown and grown into the most powerful, most impossible job in the world. I suppose Newsweek is suggesting that a black man can't handle the job. That the reason why Barack Obama sucks all to be damned is because the job's too much for him. So now, of all the presidents that we've had, all of them, I've searched the records. I've searched records high and low all day long since reading this article. I haven't come across one article in any newspaper that I've searched, and I've searched over 52. None of them have suggested so far that the presidency was beyond the president's ability to manage. But Newsweek has concluded that Barack Obama is in over his head because the presidency has grown to the point where it's just too big. There's just too much. In 1936, Franklin Roosevelt felt overwhelmed. The New Deal had begun to spawn dozens of new agencies. And Roosevelt, he was fearful of the fragmentation of the executive branch. He asked for help. And a committee called the Brownlow Committee, which was an independent panel tasked with finding a new model for White House management, proposed offering the president some personal staff. They remain in the background, issue no orders, make no decisions, emit no public statements. The committee explained in a report responding to public skepticism about the growing size of government. Over the next 2 years, Roosevelt recruited six trusted aides. Six. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Nowadays, six aides is roughly the number Barack Obama has to handle incoming mail. Well, he can't read his own mail. Apparently, he can't read at all, which is why he uses a teleprompter, because he's doing the words, he's sounding out the words of the teleprompter phonetically, because he's such a genius. He doesn't really have all that much time to actually read or to memorize anything. So because he's been bored his whole life, and he knows exactly how smart he is, and he doesn't feel the need to do what ordinary people do, well, he's not going to go ahead and actually read anything. And that whole pesky deal about, you know, retention and retaining information in his head, well, he's just too smart for that. So he'll just have somebody else type it out, think it out, commit it to thought, and then commit it to paper, and then ultimately put it on the teleprompter, and he'll just say it. And the next day, you know, or 5 minutes after he's done saying it, it's all forgotten. So he can put some fresh info in his head later on. Doesn't sound like a very smart man to me. It sounds like a moron and a man who's basically an empty suit and a puppet. Okay, but that's just me. So, Barack Obama has 469 employees. And they all work at the White House. And they also work for councils for domestic and economic policy. And that's basically the core staff of the presidency. Other officials include an ethics advisor, a special assistant for mobility and opportunity policy, a director of African American media, and special assistant for financial markets, blah, 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 blah. So Barack Obama's got all these folks working for him because he's so smart. You know, he's a genius. So, you know, when you're a genius like Barack Obama is, you don't really have a whole lot of need to actually think. because, you know, thinking that's just boring. You know, it's just really boring. So what this Newsweek article is, and I really recommend that it be read, is that the job is just too much. It's too much for one man. But Barack Obama is a genius. Barack Obama is the great communicator, the great emancipator. He's baby Jesus. So shouldn't baby Jesus be able to handle this very simple job of President of the United States of America? Shouldn't our beloved anointed one be able to do a simple job like this? The president? Because, you know, folks were calling him, saying that he was president of the whole world. Not just the president of the United States, but Barack Obama was the president of the world. But according to Newsweek, baby Jesus can't even handle being president of the United States of America. And folks were calling George Bush W. dumb. Newsweek and most liberals are off of the Barack Obama bandwagon. They're off the butt-kissing tour. And now they're calling this guy a moron, saying that the job's too much for him. And indeed, the job is too much for any president. And that's probably why Barack Obama's not doing a very good job right now. That's probably why he sucks all to be damned, because the job is just too hard for any one man. But I thought he was Jesus. Jesus! Jesus, come back. The second coming. Or was it the third? I get confused. Now, when Jesus came back, did he come back the first time? Was that the first coming? No, the first coming was when he was born, right? The second coming was when he rose again. So when Barack Obama is coming back as Jesus, according to some, that would be the third coming, I think. Okay, all right. So Jesus, Barack Obama, can't handle the job of President of the United States, according to Newsweek. So the article goes on to state that more often Barack Obama projects a demeanor of unruffled cool, except for when, you know, he's called out, then, you know, he's not so cool anymore. Does he project an aura of cool? Because, well, I'm confused again. He's very thin-skinned. You can see flashes of anger on his face all the time. So how cool is that? Okay. Well, let's go on. He can handle the pressure and demands of the job just fine. How could he suggest otherwise? And he didn't run for office to pass on our problems to the next president or the next generation. But the issue is not Obama, it's the office. Oh my God. Well, you know, the issue is Barack Obama is in over his head. And those of you who thought he was going to be the savior of the whole world, that he was the second coming of Jesus, yes, I still recall the painting that I saw in Newsweek or Time magazine of Barack Obama riding into D.C. on what looked like Pennsylvania Avenue, headed toward the White House on a donkey, an ass, in Jesus robes and with thorny crown on his head. I kid you not. It's in there. So and with the caption at the bottom that read, "Jesus was a community organizer too." So folks are comparing Barack Obama to Abraham Lincoln, FDR, and Jesus Christ. And apparently all three of those folks combined couldn't handle the office of the presidency of the United States. It's just gotten too big and too much, And that's why Barack Obama pretty much sucks at his job. But we were warned that he would. I mean, it's like starting a... This has been football weekend, so I'm going to do a football metaphor. It's like when you start a rookie quarterback that had all the promise in the world, said all the right things at the combine, wowed him at the combine, throwing the ball accurate, fast, powerful, deep throws, throws down the middle, deep outs, all of it. Wow. Got the big signing bonus. Started in his first game, the first season, got sacked. Bam, 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 bam. Beat down. Oh, yeah. But he talked a good game, didn't he? At the combine for all the general managers and the scouts and the head coaches. But you put him in a real game where there's people coming at him, hitting him from all sides. Big 300-pound lineman coming to try to take his head off. He's not so fantastic anymore. And it takes years of seasoning, in most cases, and experience to get yourself a John Elway or a Bernie Kosar or a Dan Marino. But we didn't have years, did we? No, we put this complete and utter neophyte into the most powerful office in the history of the world, because folks are saying that George W. Bush was so horrible that we're going to go ahead and start the rookie and see if he can get us out of this mess that George Bush put us in. And apparently the rookie is not up to the task. Came back from his Asian trip a complete and utter failure. Barely touched down on American soil before he's gone again to spend more money traveling to Europe this time so he can collect more t-shirts and more souvenirs and spend more jack that we don't have. This is our president. This is what a lot of you misguided folks voted for. You get what you pay for. You started the rookie, and the rookie sucks. But this time, we don't have 4 years to develop him into a competent journeyman starter, which is probably what he'll probably end up being. The stakes are too high. Massive, massive, massive debt. A big, fat mess. And now the rookie's in play, and he is not up to the task. You know, I talked to a friend the other day, and I talked to her about my radio show, and she said that she was going to tune in and listen. And she said that she would be happy to call in and discuss with me idea of redistribution of wealth. And I said, yeah, I'd like to do that. But hey, in the meantime, let's do some background. How much of your wealth are you willing to redistribute? Now, you're a successful lawyer, I'd said to her. You make a pretty good buck, probably six figures. How much of that money do you give away? Aside from, you know, that 10% deal to your church, because she's a Baptist, so she goes to church every Sunday, and I'm sure they've got their hands out, and that collection plate crosses her path probably not once, but twice during the course of her time, you know, at church on any given Sunday. So I wanted to know how much of her money does she give away for redistribution. Maybe she's not in the $250,000 range. She didn't say. But I would like to know how much of that money she gives away. She wouldn't tell me. She wouldn't talk about it. Typical liberal. They would love to see folks like me and you, those of us who make a little bit of money, she'd love for our funds to be redistributed to those less fortunate or those of us less worthy. Those of us who decided, well, we're not really going to go to school and get an education and work real hard and, you know, and make something of ourselves. I'm just going to go ahead and wait it out and, you know, wait for somebody to give me something for free, for nothing. You know, why should I work hard when the government can take care of me? That's what a lot of folks think, especially black folks these days. So I wondered how much money, and I still wonder how much of her money she gives away. Is it half? Is it 10%? Is it 20%? Is it 30%? Does she just redistribute that paycheck? I know she's driving around in a pretty fancy car. I know she lives in a nice house. But if she was really interested in redistribution of wealth, she should start with her own wealth. Redistribute it. Give it away. Give it all away. But liberals don't think that way. They don't think that way. They would rather see the, quote, rich, end quote, that their money be taken away from them and redistributed. One of Barack Obama's, I can't. It's hard for me to bring it, you know, get to the point where I say President Obama. You know, it's really hard. But Barack Obama, David Axelrod, one of Barack Obama's loyal socialist Marxist minions, suggested that we could cut taxes and that we should cut taxes for the middle class. But that we should not and cannot afford to cut taxes for millionaires and billionaires. Okay, so what he's saying is if you pull down a little more than $250,000 a year, that makes you a millionaire or billionaire, because Axelrod and the Obama administration and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid don't want to extend the tax breaks for anybody who makes over $250,000. So my dry cleaner down the road or the owner of that Subway sandwich shop, they're out of luck. You know, they're going to have to close those doors because they're, establishments like that, small businesses, they don't make that much more than $250,000. Some of them don't make anywhere near that. So, but if you do, and you own a Quiznos or a service station, a gas station, or just a small restaurant, perhaps a Wendy's, or a small store, a meat market. We have a really fine meat market where I am called Wilkes Meat Market. I'm sure he's not pulling down. No, maybe he's pulling down a little bit more than that. But what happens when his tax rates go through the roof January 1? Who's going to get fired? Who's he going to have to lay off? Who's he going to have to let go? Is he a millionaire? Think about it. I mean, some of you out there believe that there's an infinite amount of money out there. that all these people making over $250,000, all these millionaires and billionaires have enough money, because apparently you believe it grows on trees, some of you, to pay for everybody else. When if you do the math, you'll discover that there is not enough money here in the United States or in any other country to totally pay down the debt that we owe, our national debt. We continue to spend much more than is coming in. And I'll ask again, because I asked on a previous show, does anybody care? Does anybody care? Do you just think the good times are going to roll? Or do you want to see this country destroyed? Do you want to see this country go the way of Greece or the UK or France? Do you want that? Because I talk to people all the time, and some of the people, they don't seem to get it. And what's more frightening is some of them don't even seem to care. I know. I am friends. I am on friendly terms with some who would like to see this country brought down. And you know what? I didn't know this about some of these people until Barack Obama was elected president. You know, that's when they came out, if you will. Bill Golden, my good friend, he came out. Some of my closest friends and allies, they came out of the closet. They came out as anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, anti-capitalist, anti-America. My friends, it was as if they had been freed, like a gay person coming out for the first time and telling everybody, hey, I'm here. I'm queer. No, they're saying, hey, I'm socialist. I'm anarchist. I'm Marxist. Deal with it. And I'm shocked. I look to the left. I look to the right. I see a socialist to the left. I see a Marxist to the right. Folks who are willing, who salivate at the thought of the United States of America being fundamentally transformed into something that for many of us will be unrecognizable. Think about this for just one moment. No, maybe two. What's going to happen when our economy collapses, when our American political system is in shambles? What do you think is going to happen to your children, to your mama, to your dad, to you and your way of life? What's going to happen? Are you ready for it? Are you ready for anarchy? Because it seems to me That's what so many of you are salivating over. Anarchy. The collapse of the dollar. The collapse of our American political system. And all of you who are wishing for that, who can't wait to see that happen, be careful what you wish for, because it's coming. Gas prices rising steadily. Food prices skyrocketing. Head over to Walmart and spend $100 and tell me how much you come out with out of the store with. How many bags of groceries you come out of the store with for $100? Was it the same amount that you could get a month ago? 6 weeks ago? It's not, is it? Because it's gone up 0.6% in just over a month's time. At this rate, a gallon of gas is going to cost $5.06 by this time next year. And the Obama administration will tell you that, oh, gas prices haven't really gone up. You'll see. Check it out. Now, last thing on our subject before we go for the night. Economist and New York Times columnist Paul Krugman has struck again. Dear Paul, nuttiest fruitcake underneath the Christmas tree, says the only way the U.S. will get its debt crisis under control is by the use of, you guessed it, death panels and a national sales tax. But wasn't it only a year ago where liberals, Nancy Pelosi, those morons over at MSNBC, CNN, were saying that there was no such thing as death panels, that it was all a myth, and it was all those evil, mean, capitalist Republicans, you know, using scare tactics to scare folks. There's no such thing as death panels. Well, Mr. Krugman, who keeps opening his mouth, and I know the liberals just wish he would just shut up, that he would just kind of leave the country like Obama is doing and stay far away. Well, he says that some years down the pike, we're going to get to the real solution, which is going to be a combination of death panels and sales taxes. It's going to be that we're actually going to take Medicare under control, and we're going to have to get some additional revenue, probably from a VAT, a value-added tax, which a lot of governments across Europe are using widely. That's in wide use in European countries. But it's not going to happen now, thank God. That means grandma can live a few extra years. Maybe some of our moms, those of us who are lucky to have our moms still here, maybe they get to live a few more years. But some of us, we ain't going to make it. Because if the Obama administration and the liberals and Mr. Krugman have their way, we're pretty much done for. We're going to be sitting in front of that death panel, and they're going to tell us we don't really have what it takes to live anymore. But until that time, I wish everybody a good night and a good day tomorrow and good rest of the week. God bless, and we'll talk again.